like you'd all to adjust your watches. The official time is now 1:30. An event like this never happens without some people doing a little bit of work, and an even smaller number of people doing a lot of work that's disproportionate to everyone else. But an event like this, no matter how few or how many people put effort into it, doesn't happen without organization and without sponsors. So officially, I'd like to, on behalf of you all, thank our sponsors, CERNET, Intel, and Google, for making the hosting of this event possible. And I'd invite you to put your hands together very briefly for those three organizations. I'd also like to have a show of hands of how many of you have been here for more than five Samba XP conferences over the last 10 years. Keep your hands up if it's over six, over seven, eight, nine, 10. Who has been here for more than 11 conferences? Well, to those who have come back time after time, I'd like the rest of us to again put our hands together and show our appreciation for their dedication. That's enough, not too much. Above all, I'd like you to encourage you all, when you get back to your place of employ, if your employer has in any way sponsored or helped or encouraged you to be here, I'd encourage you to go back and thank them. From all of us and from the sponsors of this event. Because without you, there'd be no conference. So with those words of acknowledgement and appreciation, I'd now like to introduce Jeremy Allison. I first met Jeremy in 1995. It wasn't that long ago, was it? Yeah. Samba was a very small piece of code in those days. You know, it would fit on a 360 kilobyte floppy disk and there'd still be room for a few more copies. It's a little bit larger than that today. And the gentleman you see standing out front here is not in any small measure responsible for the bloat of that code. No, leave that out. So Jeremy is going to speak to us what sounds like heresy, the death of file-sharing protocols. So I can't wait to hear what he has to say, and I'm sure that I speak for you all in that as well. So I'd like you to welcome Jeremy, and let's sit back and hear his presentation.
Thank you, John. Okay, is that all right? Not too loud? Yeah, great. So this is a horrible bomb-throwing presentation. I fully admit to it up front. To those of you who were at the SNEA conference in September, it's essentially the same presentation. No, it's entirely the same presentation. I'm lying. So if you've heard it before, please feel free to leave and go and do something more productive. This presentation actually came about... It was written in a horrible hurry during the SNEA conference when S.W. Wirth, who's the Microsoft representation to the Storage Network Industry Association, which is SNEA, he basically came up to me and said, "Somebody pulled out of a keynote. What the hell are we going to do? People tell me you're controversial. Can you write something?" So I indeed promised him something that was suitably controversial. And it's a shame that Tridge is in this talk because I know he hates the talk. So, and thinks it's a load of, and I quote, bollocks is the technical term he used for it. But I think hopefully you'll see it's an interesting talk. It might make you think about why you are here. It's kind of an existential talk, especially for Samba developers. I'm going to say some things that are heresy in the world of Samba and file sharing protocols. And what I would like is, it's quite a short presentation, and what I would really like is afterwards, we could have maybe a discussion about how much of it is true, how much of it is, as Tridge says, complete bollocks, and, you know, whether my prescriptions for change that I talk about actually make sense in the world that we find ourselves. Oh, and just for Dirk, who's come in, none of the pictures in this talk were cleared by... they were all found off the internet. None of them are, in fact, Creative Commons licensed or whatever, so sue me. Yes, I should probably be a bit more careful about finding my pictures, but they're all funny, so what can you do? So I work for Google in the Open Source Programs Office. I also do Samba stuff. I have the opposite job of most Google engineers in that I do 80% of my own... Most Google engineers have 20% time to do their own stuff. I have 80% time, and then 20% I have to do things for Google, so I'm kind of luxury to work on Samba like that. So let's go into the talk. When I'm talking about the death of file sharing protocols, what do I mean? Well, I don't mean that kind of file sharing, which, as everyone knows, is still going strong, going from strength to strength. Does anyone actually remember that wonderful logo, the home taping is killing music? There's, yeah, I remember buying records and tapes and stuff with that on. Didn't actually turn out to be true, but that file sharing is very popular, ongoing, and actually might be a good solution in the future for some of the problems that we face. But that's not the death of that kind of file sharing. I'm talking about this kind of file sharing. So the protocols on here, anyone remember AT&T's RFS? Anyone? Oh, there's a few old people in the room. Hurrah. So a little story. I first came across RFS when I was working in Sun in the UK, and we actually shipped it as part of Solaris. It was developed by AT&T. It was actually one of the first attempts to completely remote a Unix API to another Unix system. So it could do things like you can actually mount remote tape drives. So if SMB has been criticized as being Windows on the wire, well, AT&T's RFS was Unix on the wire. It quickly died a death against NFS. But I remember when I first joined Google... I asked my office mate what he did, and he was a fairly youngish guy, and you know, he told me all about his cloud computing stuff he was into. And he asked what I did, and I explained I did file sharing protocols, and he kind of looked blank. I said, you know, like AT&T's RFS, NFS, SMB, and you know, I said, you know, RFS was pretty old. It was like out in about 1988, and he just turned to me and said, I was 8 in 1988. So I ended up just feeling really old. But these file-sharing protocols, and these are the ones, I mean, the bottom two, obviously, are the ones that we implement. As I say here, what they are, if you look at them, is they're remote file systems, and they attempt to make a remote disk or remote server look exactly like a local file system. And I believe that this idea of remoting every single semantic of a local file system onto a remote file system is an idea whose time has come and gone. So why? Why is that? I mean, this is what we do, by the way. If you weren't aware, this is Samba's... There's many, many person years of code gone into Samba to absolutely emulate this and to make it work. So why do I say it's dead? Well... anyone know who this yellow elephant is? Anyone? Oh, cool. We're going to have a few people. So if you don't know, this is the symbol of the open source Hadoop project, which is kind of like a Java-based clustered version of... I think it's a version of Google's MapReduce algorithms. It's kind of a distributed file system. It's meant for remoting jobs into a cloud. And it was written by some Yahoo engineers. There's now a company supporting it, Cloudera. I believe it's actually the engine behind Microsoft's Bing search engine. I know it's behind Yahoo's search engine. So these high-end type file systems are pushing down, but they aren't really standard. So Microsoft and Yahoo are using Hadoop, as are many other cloud systems. Amazon has their own S3 file system. I don't know much about that. Google internally is changed from using MapReduce to something called Colossus. Don't ask me about it, because A, I couldn't tell you, and B, I probably don't even understand it. There's some immensely sophisticated code in there doing remote file system access, basically splitting incoming requests into what they call shards, smearing it out across the internal Google Cloud, allocating sectors, etc., allocating blocks. So that's very, very specific high-end file system. And essentially, it's built around the application that this runs. So the Google file system is essentially tuned precisely for Google's needs. And, you know, when you just have a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So you map everything into this system. And a lot of the clustered file systems and these kind of protocols, they're essentially proprietary. There aren't really many standards. There's some open source ones. It's this that's making the noise. Sorry, I'll try and keep it still. They tend to create their own protocols. They generally don't use the mass market sort of NFS, SMB type protocols to do these very, very high-end, very scalable file systems. And I would argue that there aren't really any standards here, and I'm not sure there ever will be, because a lot of these systems are essentially inside proprietary clouds with hosts of really smart, very dedicated engineers working inside a company on massive numbers of machines. And that kind of environment, you can't really, you know, let's imagine that Google open sourced all their file system technology. Could Amazon or Microsoft then take it and use it? Probably not. The management infrastructure, the way things are set up, it's tied to the internals of the way Google works. It's code that would be very hard to repurpose to someone else's cloud. And so people doing these kind of scalable cloud file systems, they tend to roll their own thing. And of course, you know, I mean, it's easier if you can build it on top of open source or free software. But what you end up with is usually proprietary kind of proprietary scalable systems, not generic ones. And so let's look at the file systems that are used on these back-end clusters. So Google recently, I mean, Google is built entirely on EXT. It was on EXT2. It skipped EXT3. It's now moved to EXT4, or is in the process of doing so. So it doesn't need sophisticated clustered file systems. These are clustered file systems that are more used for generic applications rather than things like the Google Cloud. So you have things like Lustre, IBM's GPFS, GFS, Gluster, I think Ceph is another one, OCFS2. These are usually supporting applications in back-end data centers. You don't generally find people running these file systems on their local machines or local desktops. You don't even usually find them running inside organizations for people to mount their home directories. What you generally find these systems is running in the back-end in data centers, and people are running specific clustered applications or things like Oracle or some other systems against it. Yeah, GPFS is probably the most generic, I think. But for most of these applications that you run on these back-end data centers, you can get away without full local file system semantics. The applications are usually written to target the file system they're running on. It's rare that you get a generic application that basically won't run unless it gets every single POSIX or Windows feature. So what I would argue is cloud-based storage and essentially accessing things remotely in the cloud, it's exporting sort of genius-level file system engineering. I mean, stuff that is way beyond mortal comprehension, running inside people's clouds. And it's available to, as I said, to most normal people. And let's be honest, you know, I don't know about you, but most of my family don't know what a file is. And they don't really care. It's like, well, here's my scanned, you know, picture, or here's my... They don't understand what a file is, they don't understand what a directory is, they just know they have pictures or they have documents. And to be honest, they can store these quite happily in the cloud. They don't really need all the sophistication of local file system semantics. So the low end, and this is kind of where I think the generic file system protocols that we write are getting squeezed, because the low end is pushing up. I mean, this a few years ago would have been a, you know, 100 megabyte disk. Now it's a 1.5 terabyte disk, and soon you probably won't be able to buy less than a 2 terabyte disk. Just a little USB device. And so where do people store stuff when they have that amount of storage? Well, they store it on the desktop, because that's where things go. You know, I mean, so, you know, I've seen people who use Windows who don't know what a file is, and that's what their storage is. Oh, well, I have a picture of what it is that's living on my desktop. And, of course, in the extreme case, you know, you could even... I must confess, that was... I think that was specially crafted by somebody, but I love the little note at the bottom. Some unused icons. So what you really end up with is a search problem. So multi-terabyte drives, people can't cope with them. They just have too much space. You can't find anything. You can't back them up either, as Chris mentioned. That's a good point. So let me tell you a story about my talks, right? I've been giving talks on Samba and various other things back in the days when I was using Applixware on Red Hat. Yes, thank you, Bradley Laffey, because he remembers Applixware. Yes, I've been giving talks for a very long time.
First time Red Hat shipped proprietary software.
Ah, thank you. That was the first time Red Hat shipped proprietary software. There was a comment. But I've been giving talks, you know, on Linux ever since that was the office suite of choice on Linux. And all of these talks that I've ever given are somewhere on that laptop, which has multi-gigabyte drive. Now, actually not on that laptop, because that laptop's Bradley's, but I must confess, I actually had to borrow Bradley's laptop for this presentation, because the video out on mine is broken. I work for a company that is, as you know, quite poor, and so I'll be passing a hat round later for a replacement laptop. Please donate generously, or just keep clicking on the ads. That'll probably have the same effect. But the issue is nobody can find anything on drives this big. Normal users, they fundamentally don't understand what files and directories are. And when you add a remote file system, it just makes it worse. It doesn't make it any better. Yeah, as I was saying, I've been giving talks for a very long time. They're all on that laptop. So,
no, I've got to find that laptop.
Well, okay. All right, so they're all on my laptop. And when I want to find some pictures or comments or whatever from one of my old slides, can anyone guess what it is that I do? How do I find my slides?
You Google through the desktop.
Close, but not quite right. I Google the web, because I know they're all out there on the web, right? And I just download another copy into some temp folder, because it's quicker and easier to do that than it is to go through all the directories with all the files that I have from all my various different companies and actually find the damn thing on my local file system. And, you know, and I understand, theoretically, I understand what files and directories are. But it's easier for me to go look on the web than it is for me to look on my local file system. That should scare you in terms of SIF and SMB semantics. So if you're writing a modern application and you want people to find stuff, and you see this on the Linux desktop in the tracker or Nautilus or whatever, or recently used places, you have to build a database in there that actually allows people to find stuff. What was the last stuff I looked at? Because that's most likely the stuff that you want to find. Or, you know, I have an indexer running, where it be the Google Desktop one or Tracker or whatever, the Windows one, to find stuff. So if you think about it that way, your local file system or even a mounted share, essentially, they're just a cache for recently accessed content. They're not anything more than that. The number of people who actually genuinely use and structure that data correctly is very rare. Professionals do it. I mean, hopefully we do it when we're setting up data centers and setting up shares for people. But then most of the problem is actually teaching them where on those shares things are, right? Nobody can find anything. So another point I'd like to make is that if you were writing... Let's imagine that you were writing, you were a computer science professor, and you were giving, you're telling your students to write a database, a multi-user access database, and they came up with a design. I know I'm picking on Microsoft Access here, but many of the others are the same. But they came up with the design of Microsoft Access. What grade would you give them? Yes, you would fail them. Because the idea of having one file that is accessed by multiple processors and uses local file locking in order to arbitrate between access, it's broken. That's crazy. I mean, if they're not designing a client-server solution in this day and age, they've just designed an application that is designed to fail and lose and corrupt data. So local file system locking, I mean, it's there. And if I could weep if I think of the amount of time and effort I've put into making Samba file locking work completely the way Windows does. And I'm sure the Windows engineers feel exactly the same, only to find that it really doesn't matter. And applications that do it that way are broken, and they really are. So, you know, let's look at what modern applications that where people share files, what do they look like these days? Well, I mean, I can show you. So, SharePoint. Yes, that's kind of a remote file server, but that's the method that people use of collaborating software. It doesn't use local file system access. Google Docs and Spreadsheets, another one. Completely web-based. People just store it somewhere. They don't care where, as long as they can get it back. That's all they care about. LinkedIn. A lot of people on LinkedIn. I'm conducting an experiment as to how many LinkedIn connections I can get whilst never ever asking anybody for one. So I kind of think I'm winning right now. And of course, the wonderful Google. Oh well, never mind. Well, that was a nice idea. Another one of those methods of sharing files and connecting with people. And of course, then there's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. But, I mean, okay, who here doesn't have a Facebook profile? Hey! I'm speaking to the right audience, thank God. Yeah. I think you should realize how rare that makes you. It means you are all weird, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, but... I think I can say this. Normal people have Facebook profiles. And that's pretty much how they communicate. So, but what about my home media server? Poor old Windows home server there. Yeah, well, I mean, I have a home media server. But to be honest, so I my home media server is basically Samba running on a Linux box with 12 terabytes of music, movies, and whatever. But to be honest, the way I use it is probably an anachronism. I use it to test Samba and, you know, to keep my 5-year-old entertained. But for most people, they don't want to have to find their movies by navigating files and folders. In fact, most of the little media boxes that you can buy, very few of them actually can, well, they can usually fall back to a file and folder-based view, but most of them don't. Most of them want to do streaming. And how do I know this is true? Well, because I heard him say this. I was in a car where we were discussing media and we were discussing streaming media problems, and Vince said, well, eventually all media streaming problems become file transfer problems when the net gets fast enough. So you basically you transfer the file down and cache it locally. So what are the things that these devices need? Well, they don't really need share modes, ACLs, or file locking. Well, ACLs maybe only to the sort of make sure your 5-year-old isn't watching Pulp Fiction or something, you know. But you need parental controls. That's probably about it. But file and directory-based views, they don't really work. They're not the right method of looking at your content. What they need, and televisions are becoming media streaming devices, they need good search capabilities. So really, the file sharing, local file system remoting protocols that we use, they're essentially obsolete. They're not what we should be using. We should be using search-based protocols, right? And then the method of transferring underneath is, you know, is essentially a file transfer problem, but it doesn't need to be SMB. You can actually stream this stuff over HTTP or whatever. It doesn't really matter. But searching for the stuff is the first important thing. So what does good search look like? Well, you know, hate to toot my own company's horn, but I think that's a good search interface. It really is. It's simple. Everybody knows what it is. You just type in whatever you're looking for in there, and something will turn up, right? So what else is a really good search interface? So this is a picture of an iPhone app that will allow you to search simply by having music playing. You hold the iPhone app up to it. It goes away and searches some big database in the cloud somewhere. Nobody knows or cares where it is, except the people have to maintain it. And then it comes back and it tells you what song it was that was just playing on the radio. And being Apple, there's probably a buy button down at the bottom somewhere for buy on iTunes. But so we're kind of being squeezed. There's the big elephant Hadoops of the world and the map reducers and the shared file storage pushing down. There's the massive amounts of local storage that really need good search pushing up. And what we're left in the middle is really data center protocols running to service particular applications. So we're being squashed. So what can we do? Well, we can hide in the data center. That's a good place to hide. Solaris hid there for quite a while. I think they're finally dying out, but that was kind of like that's a good place to hide. And in fact, I remember I was talking with this with one of the Apple engineers, who shall remain nameless, after I gave this presentation, and he said, "You know, I agree with everything in your presentation, but I only need 10 more years, and I'm going to retire, so I could care less." So there is that. You know, maybe 10, 15 more years, I won't have to care anymore. But there's going to be... So right now, there we are. We're hiding in the data center, providing high availability to applications that need local file system semantics. But there aren't that many, and there'll be fewer in the future. So, you know, as I say, it's a living. It's not a thriving one. It's like being a backup vendor, you know? It's kind of... It's a living. It's just tedious. So that's, you know, in some ways, that's kind of where we're headed. That's where NFS is headed. That's possibly where SMB and SMB2 are headed. Although they still may be on the local, you still may have local media servers that use it for file transfer. But so here's the radical idea. Search is the key. So what if we were to embrace search and say search is important, even, you know, for the standard file sharing protocols that we implement. So what would that look like? Well, it might look something like that. Somebody already tried it, but for some reason that never made it out into production. I don't know why. Maybe someone in this room might know, but the other thing is Fuse. Fuse can actually do something similar. You can basically go through the VFS via Fuse and onto a third-party server. You can do some sophisticated things there. You can interpose anything. So what might that look like? So right now, look at our standard file-sharing protocols, and you have sort of open directory of pathname or find first file in Windows. But what if you did open directory and what you handed it was a list of search attributes? Or maybe a fragment of an MP3 file or some music or whatever. And what it came back with was the handle, which then provided you with path names, you know, that mapped, that were virtual path names that essentially were made up on the fly and mapped to all the files that you had that matched those attributes. So we need a change in the Y protocol, because you need to be able to pass those attributes down to some kind of a search call. Actually, this is pretty easy in SMB2, because ntcreate, or the create call in SMB2, the open call, already takes attributes. You could add extra search attributes into SMB2. I think NFSv4 would need extensions to be able to do something. But it's not that big of a change. It's not that hard to do. Another way that could be this could be done is, imagine you when you create a share, you don't create a share and you say, okay, map this to slash, you know, user slash data or whatever. You say, create me a share on this file system and map it to this list of search attributes, so that the server, whenever you attach to that share and you enumerate through there, your open directory then returns a list of paths that match those attributes. So rather than changing open, that would mean no change to the Y protocol whatsoever. That would literally just mean a change to the share definition or the mount points. Now, I think there's something interesting there, I think, that nobody has built a product on yet. So is it worth it? Right now, individual applications have to do this themselves. So Windows Explorer, GNOME Tracker, or whatever, it indexes files, you let it run, it produces indexes inside of metadata and allows you to search. But it still leaves the what is a file, where do I store it, what's the path name problem for normal users. Then I think the method of actually defining a share by means of attributes would solve. Essentially, you're just saying save it on the desktop and let Tracker sort it out, ending up with the kind of desktops that you saw before. So I just get the feeling, and you know, I got several people coming up to me after the talk. I gave this talk last time, kind of interested. There is a product hiding here. It's some kind of a box that maybe it's a gateway to cloud storage in some way. Maybe it's a local. Maybe it's a way of looking at your already existing stored files. Imagine you have a media server. You have one share that you drag everything to, and then you have a bunch of virtual shares that say, you know, show me my Westerns. You know, that maybe takes an English or a natural language search string that turns into a virtual list of files that match the search string that you've given. I don't know. I think there's something here. I think it might be interesting for someone to build. I think you could probably build it quite easily with Samba and a combination of some clever code. So, you know, I'm trying to inspire people here to actually think about what might be possible and what will happen if we don't do something like this, or if we don't try and change what it is we're doing. Otherwise, we become backup, which is a living, you know. Last me another 15, 20 years, maybe. So let's poll the audience here. So first of all, does anyone actually agree with my initial statement that there's a problem with the protocols we're using? All right, anyone agree with me? Some, not bad. I would go to say 30, 40%. So is the problem I described, is that the problem? Or do you think it's something else? So who agrees with me that that is the problem? Aha, less so. All right, so this is the part, hopefully, where we can get people to argue. What I would very much like to hear is what you think the problem really is. And lastly, and we can hopefully hand the mics out for this. Lastly, does anyone agree with my conclusions? Anyone here? Well, I do, obviously, but cool. Okay, so, all right, let's take some questions, and let's find out what people think the problem really is and how right or wrong I am. I know, Dirk, did you want? Yeah, cool, all right.
So I, of course, always agree with you. That's
thank you, yes.
Good starting point. I think the actual problem is not the protocol that they use, but the actual problem is what are people trying to do? And, mm-hmm. and as you describe yourself, you know the file is on your file system, you still go to Google to look for it.
Yes.
And I've switched my email to using Not Much, which is an open source project that uh-huh. emulates Google Mail on your local file system, so everything becomes searchable.
Right.
Email has no folders, has nothing, it's all just something that you search. And to me, the actual question is, how do people interact with data today? With what we consider files. And your mom and my mom, and oh, by the way, most kids who spend 8 hours a day on Facebook don't think of files. They think of data. And how do you interact with data? You search for it and hopefully you'll find it.
So how do they label that data? How do you imagine they label that data? How do they? What is it that they use to find a particular piece of data that they're...
If you talk to the 17-year-olds, the biggest problem is they don't find it. The biggest problem is that it's not magically labeled. So to me, the thing that we as a community need to solve is how do you find data? Searching is easy. The finding part is hard. And B, how do you get to the point that you no longer have to... I mean, you said, suddenly the search terms become the mount attributes. Now that's ass backwards. How do you not have to manually define what you're searching for?
Ah.
So in Not Much, for example, I manually give out tags for something that I know I will be searching for later. Now that's wrong. I actually want to be able to literally use natural language and ask my computer a question, and it figures out the answer for me. And so let's start with, you know, face recognition, and I want to search for all pictures of you. Oh, well, maybe not of you, but of...
Yes, you'd be a very sick man doing that, but yeah.
Seriously.
So do you think...
To me, the next innovation here is the combination of, okay, search is the access methodology, but how can I automatically create the terms that are associated
right.
with the data that I store.
So what you want is a magical share or folder that you drag things into, and they disappear into that, but what comes out of it is an index that is searchable. I'm glad you said that, because this was a product that I went up and down Sand Hill Road, if you know Silicon Valley, trying to sell to a bunch of venture capitalists in about 1997. Nobody would... I was 10 years before my time. Thank you, Dirk. Yes. So we have another.
I was describing SharePoint there. Drop things and index them.
Sorry, where is he? There you are, yes.
Yeah. But I think that we have to be careful. This is a big software world with thousands of needs, and we're describing a product that has direct access to users and does search. I think there's always a niche for different types of file sharing, but I think that we have to be careful. We are the obstacle. We develop software, many of us, and getting stuff in the kernel fast enough to satisfy the requirements of somebody who gives up on us is a challenge. And I think that this probably happens 100 times more often than we see. So I do want to should have a mea culpa here, because some of the reasons that we have a proliferation of cluster file systems is there's no good cluster file system.
Yes, and there still is no good cluster file system.
You know, Ceph is now in there,
but this is our
developers. You know, if we were all as smart as Tridge.
But the reason there are so many cluster file systems is because each of those cluster file systems has a reason for existence, and it's a particular set of applications that wants those semantics but doesn't care about others.
Yeah, but let me give you an example.
But this is hiding in the data center, Steve.
I agree that there's hiding in the data center, but I mean, I'll give you an interesting example of the kinds of requirements that get tossed away. A developer working with me wanted to pass options so Wine would work with the Windows semantics over the network file system.
Mm-hmm.
The general reaction was, well, why the hell do you want to help Wine? Or, you know, this kind of thing, right? So I think we have to be careful, because a lot of times we're pushing these people into creating their own thing. I don't know if that was the case for Hadoop, but I suspect that, you know, there's a reason that we have a web dev and a Hadoop and many, many user space file systems, and all of the reasons sound good when you read their charts.
Well, that's what I mean. They're all solving a specific set of application problems that were important for the people who helped create them. But there is no generic protocol or file system that satisfies all of those. And maybe there can't be. Maybe it needs to splinter into a bunch of separate small ones, and we need to go hide in the data center until we die, which looks like the most likely
also,
scenario.
We
right
see
now,
the bad news, and one thing I want to give you good news. Remember your friend Jeopardy, because we're all, we all worship our computer overlords, right? As the guy
yes.
says, that Watson computer is running NFS.
Wow, that's and it still worked.
That's a Linux. By the way, we did find Linux NFS bugs, but
I'm sure that you did.
But I want to think about that. No one contacted us about that. It just worked. Okay, so this is not Google. Watson was running Jeopardy with NFS.
All right, Chris.
There was a lot in the discussion back here regarding mail and other aspects. One of the things, I also shopped an idea to some venture cap. We don't have a street. We just have a building.
Well, it's Minnesota.
In Minnesota, right?
Think small. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry.
And what was interesting is the response I got when I pitched my idea, and the response was, no, what I need is a file system that works like my email. Because right now, instead of searching on the web, what this guy from the VC company was saying was what he does when he wants to find something he's lost that he knew he had is he goes searching through his mail.
Yeah.
And he searches by date, by name, whatever he can remember. And that brings up the interesting point. You talk about tagging. One of the things about tagging is it's very, very hard to do. I went to a presentation you mentioned Hadoop. Thomson Reuters gave in the Twin Cities. And they talked about the fact that they were using Hadoop just to tag the documents
mm-hmm.
because they needed that much horsepower just to tag their
documents.
Oh,
that's interesting.
And they know what they're looking for.
But so they must be decomposing the documents into various phrases and words and then tagging so you can search on any subset of... Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But this brings up the point again about the 17-year-old saying, well, I never find it. It's because you don't know what to look for and you don't know what the system that is doing the tagging automatically for you has tagged for you.
Mm.
Even Google, I have to think about the query. If I'm looking for something special, I have to think about the query very carefully to find what Google might think.
But there are some, Bill was saying facial recognition, there are some things that you can do. For instance, if you're dragging in pictures, one thing a smart appliance could do is automatically do facial recognition on any single picture and essentially have the ability to say you drag a picture rather than sort of mounting a share, you drag a picture when you want to mount a share, you essentially drag a picture to an interface that says give me a directory with all people with all that person in it, with every picture with that person in it, and what you would get back is a remote file share that only has pictures of that person. That kind of... Anyway, Bradley, did you have...
Yeah, so I think what Dirk's saying is right. I believe that people search and can't find stuff. I think the subtle problem with what you're saying is you're basically saying that there are artificial intelligence problems we haven't solved, right? So we're really proposing, we need better search capabilities and have the file systems look like search, but we don't have the AI problem solved enough. And AI researchers would come in and say, in fact, all of computing was AI once. Right.
We
solve AI problems, then it becomes regular computing. So when you say, it's a living and it's not going to last, that's true of any computing.
Because it needs to
roll downhill, right? So you bring up something in Watson, it's doing the AI problem to make the next generation.
It doesn't have to be that sophisticated. Look at people searching stuff in email, right? People using search interfaces to email. Right now, they're pretty happy with what they've got. Imagine that you had the same level of search capability that you have in your email on a file system share. That would be a product. That would be good enough. It doesn't have to be some cutting-edge AI that does all this magic stuff. If you could simply enter a server slash letters from my mom, for instance, and what you got back was a share that contained only letters from your mom, that's good enough, and what that means is you have this magic share, you drag things to, the magic share indexes them, and essentially when you create a new share, what you're doing is you're creating a virtual view of path names that are indexed via that indexing system. And at that point, people can compete. They can build better indexing systems, they can build better tagging systems. You have a whole new product category You have a whole new appliance.
I agree with you. There's a product in there.
That's what I mean. I think
it's just
product.
Another thing that's going to be a living for 10 or 15 years.
Sure.
It's not getting to the next level of solving the problem.
Hey, I'm not promising to solve world peace here, Matt. I'm just trying to stay relevant for another 20 years.
Yeah.
Until I retire. So, all right. I think we've run out of time, but thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you for the discussion.
Oh, thank you.
Right. Bradley needs his laptop. Oh,
sorry.
Thank you.
Leave your USB key for a moment. I'm going to get the slides for you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Can you grab that mouse?
Yeah.